Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur. I travel around having conversations with founders, investors, and those who support the entrepreneurial community here in Orlando. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation with Bill Pepler, who is the founder and COO of a company called Cavaliero here in Orlando. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Josh, for having me. Really appreciate it and look forward to it.
Absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what is Cavaliero?
Absolutely. So I'm actually one of the founders of Cavaliero. I'm one of three partners that we have here. Bill Pepler, been in Orlando for quite a while. My undergraduate degree was here at UCF. That's what brought me to Orlando. Went to high school and middle school over in Brevard County. So initially, before that, was in New York. So my roots are in New York, but really Brevard County, and then for UCF for my undergraduate degree. I have been in the IT staffing and services industry for now over 20 years. It's hard for me to believe. My undergraduate degree at UCF was in 1996, and had a chance at a very early age, right out of college, to work for a firm called Technisource that was pre-IPO at the time, and in IT staffing and services, and those are industries that I didn't even know existed while I was going to school. But I knew I liked talking with people. I knew I was involved very much at UCF. I was the president of my fraternity, a student government senator on the orientation team, and didn't really know how to translate those things and being comfortable talking in front of groups to making money and making a living. I thought I was on my path to go to law school. I was a political science pre-law major. And as I was taking LSATs and starting the process to apply for law schools, I had a fraternity brother at the time said, "Hey, I think you'd be good at this." And I'm like, "Well, what is this? Why would people pay people to find jobs?" I didn't understand the concept. And now thinking about it, you know, 20 years later and how much our country has changed about how people are employed with the gig economy and project-based economy, it's amazing how much has changed. And it's a people-based business. And I knew that if I could talk to people, I could be successful at what I was doing. Didn't really know that was sales or entrepreneurship at the time, but I felt comfortable in front of a room and talking to people. And I was there for over 6 years, had a very good opportunity at that young age to be thrust into management. Realized I was a terrible manager before the age of 25. Had a chance to open up an office, really sight unseen, in Seattle, Washington for them. And this is the late 90s, where chance to work with very early on Amazon.com and Microsoft and Boeing and a lot of the companies out that way, and then had a chance to do it again in Southern California. Made my way back to Florida, realized I was an East Coast person, and no offense to San Diego or Seattle, but I love living in Florida. And I then went to go back and get my master's degree in business management, and then spent close to 7 years with Robert Half International, which is a $5 billion staffing and consulting company. Really learned a complete other side of the financial consulting business, and really how to run a company, very well-run company from a top end. And then I had two fraternity brothers going back to UCF and our connection that were part of another company called Skillstorm. My partners Mark Moore and John Mahoney and his wife Diane. And in anticipation of an exit they were taking in that company, I had came on board, left on good terms and my own terms from Robert Half, and knew that we were going to start Cavaliero. I didn't know it was going to be called Cavaliero at that time. And I came on board a year prior to that happen. Cavaliero coincidentally means knight. It's kind of an homage to our UCF days in a very seldom used language that we found. And there was really no, from an entrepreneur standpoint, I read a magazine once that said, "Hey, if your name sounds like an Italian or Mexican restaurant and ends in a vowel, you're on your way to a good path of naming a company." So once we came up with Cavaliero, I said, that's our name. We're sticking with it. And as soon as I told somebody, though, they said, "Oh, I would have named that with a C." So I went and immediately grabbed the domain and had to spell it to a C. And today, if you go on there, it redirects you to Cavaliero. But we're primarily an IT staffing and solutions company headquartered here in Orlando, Our flag is planted in Research Park for main reasons, because of the simulation technology industries. UCF is very near and dear to us as a relationship as well. And we have an additional 6 offices all across the country. In that eight-year period as Cavaliero, we've been on the Inc. 500 list for 7 consecutive years. We've had a really nice run. We're in other markets in Jacksonville, in Atlanta, in Charlotte, in Washington, D.C. area, in Northern California, in Sonoma County. We've made 2 acquisitions in that 8-year period ourselves, and we have also launched and incubated 3 separate companies within Cavaliero that have had successful exits as well. So a real culture of entrepreneurship and the empowerment of employees. A lot of things you hear that are heavy culture-based and things that when we created the company were really just, as far as core values, were just words on walls and cool colors of paint. But the people that we have here, and hopefully you felt it when you came into my office today in Orlando, the spirit of our people and the tenacity then really jumps off the page. And it's by design, but very early on, but the people make it what we are today. So it's been very successful to have partners that I trust. That can be a double-edged sword. Having partners that are your friends and good contracts make great partners. So it's been a nice ride. We really feel like we're still just getting started from a standpoint of what's our next level of growth for us. I'm not going to say the first 7 or 8 years were easy, but that next level of growth for us is so, so critical. And that includes additional markets, additional leadership that needs to come in, potentially some other acquisitions as well. And we're excited. We're looking here to our annual conference next year, where we set our goals and budget for the following year. And everyone's really fired up about what's in front of us here in 2019.
Nice. So taking us back to your college days, right? So you're going to school and you were thinking maybe going into law.
Yep.
You were exploring different routes, and then a fraternity brother came to you and he said, hey, you would probably be good at recruiting.
Right.
Let's just say that conversation didn't happen.
Right.
What path do you think you would have taken, or that your parents, would have seen you doing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think I would have eventually found my way to sales and marketing. I really have a passion for process and operations. But in essence, I think everyone in our company, regardless if you're client-facing or back-office-facing, we're a sales and service organization. So I think I would have found sales and entrepreneurship and realizing this was a key moment for me early on in life, to know that how hard I worked, there was an equation to how much money I made. And I knew if I put in extra time and overtime and did things that other people were not willing to do, that there was a direct correlation to my paycheck, and I like that. Whether it was commission-based employment or even going back to while I was in school, I worked in the service industry. I was a server. I was a waiter, horrible at it. I worked at the L House, actually, which I still go to today with my family. But
zingers are amazing.
That's it. Right? Absolutely.
So what made you a bad server?
Something that anybody asks me, what makes me successful in what I do today, I tell them that, one, it's being, I think, personable, but 2, or very high up on that, I have an amazing memory. I never forget a thing or a deal or a name, and I think back then, I never wanted to write anything down because of that, but that also can be a blessing and a curse. So I think I would forget some orders, or maybe not a photographic memory, but pretty close. And I realized that customers were not very happy if you forgot something.
Yeah.
So I knew that that was not the path for me. But I did like the stance that you could hustle and get a bigger tip if you engage people. And I like that aspect of it.
Yeah. See, so, I think everybody should be a server at some time in their life.
Yes.
To realize, like, your ranch really isn't that important, right? But you also learn how to manage projects. You learn how to connect with people and build a relationship fast, because your money depends on it.
And then here in Orlando, I mean, I worked at the one off of Kirkman. So we had people from all over the world. So you're talking about people that you're immersed with other cultures and how people order and language barriers and things of that nature. So when we interview today, when I see that on people's resumes, I'm like, oh, tell me about that. You're also on your feet all day long, right? So
yeah.
I do agree with you there.
Yeah, to this day, I still have nightmares of being triple sat, like on a Sunday or something like that, and I'm trying to, anyways.
Oh, yeah.
So you were a server, and your buddy said, you should really check out this world of recruiting and staffing.
Yes.
So what, you said, okay, I'm going to look into it. What was that first, like, what did you do with that information?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question, and I made a comment this week because we had two new hires start in Orlando, and they were putting together their phone system and logging in and doing all that fun stuff on the first day of employment. I remember my first day, I was handed a box to build a desk, and I'm the least handy person in this company, but that was my first day, and I was in a small room with four people, and again, the concept of talking to people on project-based employment, and this is 1996, 1997. So we were looking into Y2K, the dot-com boom and bust. I love the new show on National Geographic, The Valley of the Boom. I don't know if it just started this week, but it's talking about this exact time with Netscape and when the internet was taking off and how things changed in Silicon Valley. And I was on this side trying to find staff for people on those type of projects. And again, I knew that if I worked extremely hard, there was a base salary, which my base salary was $20,000 a year, and I shared a house with three dudes and thought I was the king of Orlando. But I knew that my base salary was not the means to my living, it was the commission piece, and you could double your salary the first year. And I set a goal to do that, and then I set a second goal to be able to lease a car at a certain car payment. And that's how I worked. I reverse engineered it. If I knew that if I worked X amount of time and how many phone calls it took me to get in touch with somebody, and then how many candidate submissions it took me to get an interview, and then how many interviews did it take me to get a hire, I reverse engineered it and just focused on the piece that I could control, which was the activity piece. And my whole life and career has been that, kind of break down things and then do the one part that I could control. And that's what I focused on, and I knew I could do well at that by making things happen, picking up the phones and talking to people.
Nice. So I love this idea of reverse engineering your success, right? So what advice do you have for an entrepreneur out there who's looking to build and grow and sell a company one day? Like, what advice do you have in terms of reverse engineering their success, their path?
Yeah, and I think hearing some of your other folks they've been on this is really think about the exit early on. Think about where you want to be and where you want to grow, whatever organization you're in, whether you're a part of one or you're going to continue or consider starting one. Think about what that exit strategy is and bust your tail to get there. You know, again, I go back to there's very few things in this industry that you can control. Because we work with people, and that is a fantastic thing that, you know, you can find someone a particular project or get somebody a really hefty raise. And more times than not, when you talk to people, they're extremely grateful and really interested to hear what you have to say, even if they're employed, by the way, because everyone wants to hear what else is out there. So I was telling this again to those same new hires this week. I said, when you're calling people, it's not necessarily a cold call because, one, you found their person's profile or resume or what have you, and two, you're calling to offer something that might be better than what their current situation is versus selling a widget or what have you, where people may not have a need for that particular thing. And so your conversations are engaging from that start. And so control that activity piece. Regardless of what your role is or regardless of what your organization is, and I'm also a big believer in you choose your attitude when you come into work, and people can see and sense that, and also people can pick up on the way you're trying to be from an organizational standpoint. And I mean by that is everyone has good and bad days, professionally, personally, what's happening at home, all that happens before you get to work. And then when you come to work, you choose your attitude because, and in my case, people look up to you and they pick up on the vibe you're throwing out there. And I want to be consistent in that every single day. I don't want them to think I have great days and bad days. I want them to see that I'm the same person every single day. So that would be my advice to an entrepreneur. Don't get caught up in the highs and lows. Keep it in the middle. And it sounds like a song.
Yeah.
It's very popular with my...
Can you sing that to us?
No, absolutely not. I'll leave that to the professionals. But stay in the middle and control the activity piece are two things to me that I share, energy and attitude and, you know, buy in every single day. That would be my advice.
Nice. It's good advice. Before we hit record, we were talking about running. So you're a runner.
Yep.
Right. Do you listen to what do you listen to when you run, or do you listen to anything?
Yeah. Well, I try to be a runner, so I run with a lot of help. So I was just sharing this with somebody this week. I've done 7 half marathons in the last 3 or 4 years, but I didn't run any before. That's only in the last 3 or 4 years, and I had never done one before that. So I'm a runner, but a late runner. I didn't grow up running. I played sports, but I never really ran just to clear my mind or run for exercise. If anyone wants to start, I'm a big believer in the programs that the Track Shack runs, get a good, great pair of running shoes and run with a group. But for me, I'm a big, I love building out a playlist and finding particular motivational songs. I'm not a big listening to podcasts while I'm run. I need to be engaged from a music standpoint. And then other people I talked to was like, no music. I just want to clear my head. But with music, I've come up with what I think are good ideas for our company and just to de-stress. It's so many valuable benefits by being able to run.
Yeah, give us one of your favorite songs on your playlist.
Oh man, that's a great question. Probably old school from a standpoint. I have the most diverse playlist that you could imagine, from 1980s and 1990s rap.
Yes.
EPMD, Kool Moe Dee, Big Daddy Kane. Growing up in that world, and Tribe Called Quest. That was like what I grew up on.
Yeah.
To like, I'll also go back to like Bruce Springsteen and Born to Run and Bob Seger, like all that kind of old school rock and roll type stuff too. Not as much of like the hardcore. My 11-year-old listens to like Travis Scott and these things. I'm like, what the heck is these mumble rap? That's not for me. So old school rock or old school rap is my thing.
Yeah, good, very good. All right, good.
Show my age, I guess.
Yeah, well, I love old 90s rap, man. Yep. There's nothing better than that. All right, so I like, you could choose your attitude when starting a new job or when starting a new business or even after failing a business. Like, how do you maintain middle, right? Yep. So how do you smooth out the highs and lows?
That's a great question and probably a constant struggle. For me, it's easy from a standpoint that I know that, you know, when I open these doors in our conference room, I have eyes on me. And I had great advice from a supervisor in the past who said, when you're out in a bullpen or an open environment setting, it's the greatest show on earth. Because when the team looks at you, they want you to be positive and not have your head held low. It's challenging, especially as you grow a company. The challenging part is how big your company grows, but you know, your back office grows as well. And you know, we've experienced that, the growing pains, if you will, of when your company top line grows, your back office grows, and working with people, it becomes challenging. And you can't anticipate some of the pitfalls or problems that you go through. So for me, it's just a reminder. It's like, I can have a bad day, but I can't let my staff see it. And I also am a big believer in being authentic. So if you meet me while we're running, or if you meet me at home or at one of my children's athletic events, I like to be the same person I am 100% of the time. And that way, I don't have to remind myself of wait, what did I say to this person? I'm the same person to everybody. And that helps me stay in the middle, because I'm a big believer in being authentic to my customers and not trying to put on or be somebody that I'm not. And that keeps me grounded, and my family keeps me grounded. It reminds me of where I came from. So that helps.
Nice, nice. So, I mean, from an early age, you dove in, you stayed focused in this industry, and you really built out some great chops in the world of recruiting and staffing. And so you could probably have a good understanding of how far we've come in this industry of staffing and recruiting, and where do you think it's going?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on how far it's come, and maybe where it's going in the future?
Yeah, great question. I think, and I've been in the industry, you know, I think pushing 20 years. I did take about a 20-month sabbatical and tried something else while I was going to graduate school, and realized that I really love this industry. I loved impacting people's lives from a career standpoint. And I've seen, you know, in my time period, if you think about it, Y2K, what, you know, finding the software developers and computer programmers that were going to prevent the end of the world from happening. And in that case, we were finding people that hadn't coded in 25 years to come back, and they were making big, big money to do something that ultimately nothing happened with that.
Because you saved the world.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely right. So we were, you know, finding COBOL programmers and all that type of stuff to the dot-com boom and bust, and especially being out in Seattle, seeing that at an early age. Like I tell the story here in 2000, like walking into Amazon back then, and knowing that, okay, online books were one thing, but just feeling the culture of the company was amazing. Like you could see that the people that they hired, you could see that they brought their pets to work and things like now that you hear companies doing, but they were doing it. And I never felt so out of place walking in there with a suit and tie at a very young age, and I did not fit in. And I was told that next time I came back, I think I wore jeans and a t-shirt, and I felt more at home going there. And then going through things like the financial crisis, September 11th, and seeing what's happened most recently with our country and the economy. You know, we've really moved towards a project-based economy. My father and people one generation above, the average of employment that they worked for employers was over 20 years. And in our generation, the average employment for any project or employment is 3.5 years. And that's just in one generation how things have changed. So I think from a project-based standpoint, the gig economy, the way that you can get anything through your phone. We were joking beforehand how it's hard to put my phone down. Well, we live our lives on our phone. I run our company on our phone through dashboards and instant messaging and technology. It's really changed from would you consider a project to attempt to hire to, well, everything's a project. And you think about it, every job is a project, specifically in technology. But now I think it's moved to other industries as well. There's a beginning and a middle and end to a particular thing you're working on. And most of the times in technology and software, which is where we spend most of our time, the people that we work with, they want that next challenge. And either they're doing it for themselves as a full-time consultant or have their own entrepreneurship type company. So I think that's one big thing of how it's changed. I also believe more project-based employment is happening from a complete middle and end to a project, and I'm talking about services space. So we used to just submit candidates for staffing. We launched a perm-specific division, a project-based division, and where we'll take over entire technical engagement. So provide the project management, the people aspect of it, and then also we do a deliverable as well. So I think it's changed, and I think it will continue to change. Things like the cost of benefits are driving that. How much it costs to employ anybody in this world. You know, we feel that as still a small business, how much it costs for workers' comp and employment insurance and benefits. It's unbelievable how much those things cost for the small and mid-size and the entrepreneur. Those are things that you don't learn or you could sit in, and when you start a company, you don't really realize, yeah, it seems like it's easy because the rewards might seem like they're easy, but everything that goes into running a company is daunting. And I'm talking legal fees and contracts, and it never, never ends. And especially in the people business, you know, we leave a lot of our business up to, you know, to chance from the standpoint that things can go great and things can also not go so well. So I really think that's how things are changing in our industry specific. There's a lot of people that do what we do, and there's a lot of companies that are great companies in Orlando that do what we do. I think the key is to make sure that you have a place that people want to come to work and feel like they're supported, and also a place where you know, our customers are treated extremely well. And I'm talking both customers, the candidates that we place on projects and the customers ultimately that hire people from us. You got to treat those people like gold, because now with tools like LinkedIn and Google, everybody knows who they are. There's no secret. There's no, hey, you work with this person. Everybody knows who you work with. So how well you treat those people. And for us, we always try to remember that we're only as strong as our last placement. and or last project. And that's a lot to take on, but it's the mindset that we have that drives us every single day. We're only as good as the last thing we just did. We don't try to rest on our laurels for the last 8 years as well, what we've done as a company.
Man, that's so awesome. So we're moving from what you're seeing, we're moving towards more of a gig economy, project-based agreements between employer or contractor or employee. So when I was growing up, my dad's advice to me was, get a job, you know, get your education, get a job, work there for 30 years and get, you know, and retire, right?
Yeah.
That's changed big time. And I started noticing that in 2000s, early 2000s. So every 3 years, you know, people's jobs might change. What advice do you have for people who are getting into the workforce now, knowing that their jobs are probably going to change every couple of years and that they constantly have to pivot and grow and stay on top of what they're doing? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, and I also saw another interesting statistic that was talking about, similar like myself, being a pre-political science major and then my degree was in something different. 85% of people who are graduating today, their first job, it has nothing to do with what their degree is. So my advice always is to get that degree. I was talking to our VP of HR yesterday whose degree was in anthropology. And I was teasing her about that. And she said, listen, no, I knew I just wanted to graduate. And that was the path for me. And it was an interest of me. I said, that's really phenomenal. One of the new hires that we had this week was exercise and physiology major and wanted to get into facilities for the healthcare industry. Well, that's a really niche field. And he realized after doing that, specifically in that field, that it wasn't for him. So my advice is to, one, make sure you're always learning something, whether that's traditional four-year or two-year university, but a trade school, something or a program, something that you can continue to try to learn new things. And I think that is very much how we run our company. We don't have all the right answers. And, you know, doing this for a couple other companies, some very well-respected companies, there's new things I learn every single day. And the great thing is that when you have a management and a culture that listens to people, it opens up your ears to amazing opportunities. We hire and have a great partnership with the university. Orlando's got amazing tools and resources available for companies, first stage, second stage, entrepreneurship type companies. One thing I would recommend, everybody should connect with the UCF and the technology incubators. Also, we work with the UCF College of Business and the Professional Selling Program. We've had some amazing success by hiring and mentoring some people from that program. And I've learned really to open up my eyes and ears to young people's ideas. So the millennial generation and zennial generations, they're coming up with ideas that are amazing. And it's important to listen to those to empower your people's beliefs, because it's one thing to listen, it's another thing to act upon it. So I think it's really important for us as a company to continue to innovate. And a great example is that is what we did with FIRE, which came to us through one of our employees, Tim Arnold, who now FIRE was his idea and one that was fostered within Cavaliero. And really, we had an amazing story because from inception to exit was about a 36-month period. We successfully exited that company about 15 months ago. Tim is and the entire team are now part of Bullhorn, which is a software company specific to the staffing and recruiting industry, a great company out of Boston. But that idea came from us listening to what he'd come up with. And we created a partnership, gave Tim equity in that company, fostered it from Cavaliero, and successfully launched and then moved on from it as Cavaliero was more than a full-time job. But it was a great story for Orlando, honestly, because we created jobs. We utilized a lot of the resources that Orlando has to offer. We housed FIRE in Canvas, in the old Church Street Exchange. We competed in a lot of awards. We actually were a FIRE Spring Award winner. And we completely funded it ourselves without taking outside money, which allowed us to have a really nice exit story. So a really cool entrepreneurship story from us from inside the walls of Cavaliero. And can't wait to do it again.
See, that is so cool. So there was an employee working for you. He came to you and he said, hey, why are we doing it this way? have you considered this? And you've been in the staffing industry for a long time, but here, millennial and Zennial, right? Yeah. Came up with a really good idea. And talk to us about the importance of a leader listening to ideas and the importance of an employee potentially sharing. So maybe you could give some insights to us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you asked him himself, he felt comfortable enough to understood that if he did something, we would listen. And I'll never forget the first concept of what FIRE was and then ultimately became was really a middleware software product that sat in between the CRM space and then how we go and procure for job, how we find candidates, like tools like Monster or Career Builder and LinkedIn and all the social tools that we go to find candidates. Basically, it was a middleware product that synced in between the two. So instead of having multiple browsers open, he could recruit within one browser. And this is a really technically gifted individual who had a nice mix of sales and marketing, but also had the know-how on the technology side. And I'll never forget it. It honestly came to me on a Monday and said, hey, I have something. I wanted to show it to you. And I could have been like, yeah, sure, whatever, kid. Yeah, we're good. We have it our own way. What's the difference? I knew immediately that it would save time. And to me, more time equals more time on the phone, more placements, more revenue, more gross profit, more net income. That's where my head was going. But I also knew that, hey, try it out. Let us be your guinea pig. Give it to our recruiters and see what they think. And we did that very early on, and that was a really cool thing. And the next cool thing that we did is we have some friends that own similar type companies to Cavaliero, Fraternity Brothers, again, going back to our UCF days. And we said, hey, can you try this thing? And that thing, and it wasn't called FIRE at that point, but can you try it and tell us what you think, good, bad, or indifferent? We really wanted feedback. And we knew we had something when we were like 6 weeks in. And we had to take it, Tim had to take it down to change the interface. So maybe going from a red screen to a blue screen, something really similar. So it was down for about 48 hours. And all our recruiters were like, where's that thing? We need that. And that's when we knew we had to make a critical decision. Do we just use this for our own good? Or do we go and try to sell this? And again, at that point, we were probably a $35 million company. And again, a full-time job with what we were doing with Cavaliero. Could we foster this and incubate it and start this company within these walls? And would it make sense, or would it just, is it best just to use for our own superpower, if you will, to help us increase revenue? And we made the decision to start a separate company. Tim actually, we earned equity in that company. And that's what we did. We went from one company to about 20,000 monthly users, software as a service on this product. We got to a point at the end where we would need to hire 10 to 12 full stack Java developers as the tools that was used to create the software program. And that's what made the exit a good landing spot for us, is that we had this company on the Cavaliero that we never stopped moving forward with, and this other company that deserved so much more attention, management, leadership, guiding. And so when we found the partners that we did, it was a perfect entity dealing with VC and an exit. And then the company that we ultimately sold to, they went and then sold to Bullhorn 6 months later. But that, all this was happening all behind the scenes. So I like to say that that was like my second MBA of going through that acquisition, because that was a full-time job for about a 90-day period.
Yeah. And you as a company have made two acquisitions and incubated and exited three companies from internal.
Yeah.
So maybe could you give some insight as to why a company would have an M&A strategy? Like, why is it important for a company to kind of, like, that question, should we buy or build it, right?
Right. I think it's important to do both. One, we want to innovate always, and our industry is changing completely. Going back to what happened where I first started and literally was flipping resumes and key cards and very early on with applicant tracking systems and trying to find candidates on the web. And that was brand new in 1997, 1998. To now where everything is on the web and text messaging candidates and social media interactions. It's important for us to innovate, because if we just sit here in these walls and say, well, okay, great, we have our ways, what are we going to do? We're going to die if we don't innovate, I believe. So we always have to figure out what is next. And then from an M&A standpoint, this industry has been on fire from an acquisition standpoint. And I'm talking companies that are in the $500 million space and above, acquiring companies that are $250 million, $100 million companies acquiring $50 million, $50 million acquiring companies that are 5 or 10. It's important for us to look at every opportunity that comes across our desk. The acquisitions, which became our DC market as well as our Sonoma County, Northern California office, came to us just through channels that we had built up in the industry. And looking at it, you could start a branch from scratch, or you could build something that had a team in place. And both the nice thing about both those acquisitions, the staff that we acquired, they're all, for the most part, still Cavalier employees. And they, and that's a big thing, is when you have a strong culture, you can bring other things in. And they were skeptical as heck, and probably if you talk to those people, they said maybe the first year they were skeptical about us. But, you know, our culture is one that I think you can incorporate other people, other belief systems, diversification, and embrace them to feel like they're part of our family. And that was really key for us. Part of our strategy from a strategic standpoint is to look at other ones. It doesn't say that we need to have this acquisition in, let's say, the Raleigh-Durham market. We'd love to be in Raleigh-Durham. We're there, but open to opportunities. In Atlanta, we had business in Atlanta for the longest time, but we didn't have a physical office. But then we found somebody who I knew from a previous employment that came to us. And then, okay, well, in that case, we found the person, then we build the office. So being open to anything that comes across your desk is really, really important. Having the financial flexibility to be able to capitalize on that too, and also really good banking partners that allow for that too. So it's a full circle. You know, there's been a few other ones that we've walked away from, but open to ideas is really, really important as we grow our business.
Right on. So let's have a little fun on and put on the recruiter hat. So that's what you guys do, is you guys help, you know, find employees, project-based contract workers, and, yep, and the whole gambit. What kind of companies do you love working with?
Ones that give feedback. Yeah. Ones that have amazing cultures and it's easy for us to recruit for. And two, that take and allow us to have a really strong partnership where we're a part of the solution. What I mean by that is ones that can we mirror and match what their culture is. And every company we work with is completely different. And going back to my Seattle days, they were like Microsoft and Amazon.com, and then there was like Boeing, like two different type of employees. One, you know, you heavy starts, tie, shirt, a suit. And the other, who cares? Tattoos, green hair, it doesn't matter. And it's really, really important to mirror and match what your culture is. So ones that give us feedback when we do great things, but also when we don't do good things. Tell us. That's the partner that we want. Tell us exactly what you're looking for. And that's where we start our search string, through our internal database and through normal channels to find candidates. I want to find exactly what you're looking for, culture match-wise, technology match-wise, soft skill-wise, and I want them to find that person who lives right next door to your facility. And if they don't exist, then we kind of pull it back and go to a 30,000-foot approach. But just a customer, and regardless, because we have, you know, in Orlando, there's one Fortune 500 company that's headquartered here, Darden Restaurants. And there's a lot of other companies that have huge presences here. Disney World is an example, and other companies as well. But there's tons of small and mid-market companies, and right where we sit in the simulation and technology capital of the United States. I don't think that story of Orlando is told to the level that it should. There's so many great things, or the entrepreneurial world and tech world that's happening in downtown. There's so many great things that are happening in Orlando. So we don't have a perfect customer or an atypical customer. One that is just a partner, takes us to the table, and provides really strong feedback is really important to us, and feels like we're not a commodity, but a partner. So that's our best customer.
What is like one of your big crazy goals that you have in your head that you want to accomplish in your lifetime?
Yeah, that's a great one. In our space, there's 26,000 staffing company, staffing and services company in the U.S. And less than 1.4% of those are 100 million and above. And that's where we want to go. And some say chasing a top line goal may not be the best thing. And yeah, I would agree to a standpoint where very early on, top line growth was very important to us. And then as you grow your business, well, wait a minute, the bottom line is what's more important to us. And this past year, our top line growth was significant, but not extravagant. But our bottom line growth was really strong for some strategic things that we did behind the scenes. And as you grow and mature as a company, you realize they're both very important. But for me, I really want to be able to create and cultivate a company headquartered in Orlando, because there's not, of those companies, there's many of the big ones that have branch offices or facilities here in Orlando. But to have a company that started here and to get to that holy grail of number would be a really cool story for us.
Very cool. So I'm going to ask for some insider tips from you. Okay, so let's just say I'm an entrepreneur out there and I want to come work with you. I want to be a part of your team and your culture. So people who are listening get like this little advantage when they're interviewing for you.
Do you mean they're not asleep at this point?
Yeah, they're still awake. They're engaged. They're taking notes. Nice. They're like, man, I like this guy, Bill. I want to be a part of his team. What's some advice that you have for someone who's going to come interview right here in this office?
Yeah, well, if they're listening 40 minutes in and they get these answers right, they're hired immediately.
Very good. Pay attention, everybody.
Yeah, but what I will say, and it's really, really important, and yeah, I kid on that, but research is so, so important. When I was graduating and applying to jobs, I literally had to go to Kinko's and get really cool paper and mail places, and you had to go to like the library to find out who the people were. Again, I'm dating myself from that standpoint, but the power of information is so, so important to the job seeker and the employer as well. But you can find out anything by literally taking 30 minutes and realizing, you know, you could read my bio, you could see the background of the company, you could see what's really important with us, and you could peel back the onion and see, okay, we're really passionate about UCF, we love the sports teams, you know, we have a suite at Bright House Stadium. You could peel back and understand that I have three children and I grew up in New York and I may like sports teams, and just by seeing my social media, you can probably figure out which teams I like. So if somebody came in from an interview standpoint and knew those type of things ahead of time and asked me engaging questions versus just standard normal questions about, you know, like the standard knock 'em dead type interview questions, you have me right off the bat. And I tell my staff is to try to find that common ground with people that you're calling and talking to.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to speak about the things I'm passionate about, which for me is my family. It's my interactions. It's my background. It's my company, obviously. And it's where I'm from and really where we're headed as a company. So to do the research and to not just gloss over it, but come with specific questions. And one other thing, if I ever in an interview, regardless of the role, say, do you have any questions, which I always ask, the people that say, no, I'm good, you're probably not going to get the job, because there's so many things that you could ask about a company, about an organization, about my individual background. Regardless of how many interviews you've had or where I am on the interview chart, and we like you to interview with multiple people, but if I'm last and you have all your questions answered, have a few written down that you could go to ask. I think that's really, really important to never walk away without asking at least some significant questions.
Boom. You guys heard that. So yeah. If you're looking for a job and you want to learn about this, come in with some questions and I'll give you guys some tips, right? Ask him what his favorite Tribe Called Quest, you know, there like you ask go. Him his favorite song, right? So get in there. Man, this has been a blast, Bill. Let me ask you a question. What question should I have asked you that I didn't ask you? I totally missed the mark.
You did some great ones, and I appreciate that. I think we covered it all. If I had to say anything, it's just that we're really important. We're really proud to be part of the ecosystem that Orlando has to offer. And, you know, Fire was an awesome example of that. But there's many more stories working with new and emerging companies. And there's a great spirit in this city, and you feel it. It's tangible what's happening in our community as we've transformed what's happening with companies and how people are engaged in employment and all the different cool things that Orlando tech organizations are doing, or I was a part of Leadership Orlando this past year, and I love my experience there, meeting other people from other walks of life in leadership roles. People are passionate about being from, and there's not many who are from Orlando, but living in Orlando. And I think it's really, really special what we have happening here. And Cavalier is just happy to be part of it. So it's great to see what you're doing. I looked at some of the other people. I was lucky enough to know some of the other people that have been interviewed. But it's awesome to be able to share the story. And hopefully, if you get a chance, we get a chance to meet, or you want to learn more about Cavalier, don't hesitate to reach out. We'd love to talk to you and continue the growth story that we have so far.
Very cool. So with that, where can people go to find out more about you and your company?
Perfect. Cavaliero.com. Cavaliero is Cavaliro.com. I'm always on LinkedIn, always on Twitter. Bill_Pepler on Twitter, or hit me up on LinkedIn, and let's continue the dialogue.
Yeah, and if you spell it with a C, it's okay.
That's right.
They got that domain. It'll redirect
you
right
got
there.
It. That was an early lesson.
Yeah, and what we'll do, ladies and gentlemen listening into the show, we'll put all these links inside the show notes so that if you do want to connect, and you could just do that directly from there, so you connect with them directly. Bill, man, thank you for coming on the show, sharing your story, giving hope, inspiration, and education to other entrepreneurs out there. Really appreciate you.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen listening in, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. My ask to you is that you reach out to our guests. Reach out to Bill and say, hey, I heard you on the show. What you said was impactful. It helped me this way. Or, hey, I've got this big client that we could use some help with some recruiting. So my ask to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that you reach out to our guests and say, hey. Until then, we will talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.